Hi, this is Eric Schlein with the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Songfinch. Songfinch is a personalized gifting company that brings you stories, feelings, and memories to life through one-of-a-kind songs. With the option to have a song created from scratch or to personalize an existing song foundation, their community of professional songwriters will handcraft the most personal gift that you can give. It's the perfect gift for anniversaries, weddings, Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthdays, and any other of life's special occasions. Songs start at only $99, and they're delivered within 7 days. They work with over 300 professional musicians, so your one-of-a-kind song will sound like it belongs on the radio and not just a corny jingle. So once completed, your song lives on a personal web link called your story homepage, where you can listen and download the song, read the lyrics, learn about your songwriter, and share your song on social platforms. Use promo code INVEST at checkout for 10% off your song from scratch and give the best gift that you've ever given.
Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett. Here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You're listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, episode 17. We have Jason Rivera back on with us. You were on early on in the podcast, and it's great to have you back on as a guest again. Welcome, Jason.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me again, Eric. I had a blast last time. I'm sure we've talked quite a bit off air, and we get together or we get along quite well, so I'm sure we'll have a blast again.
Definitely. So just for the listeners that, you know, were unfortunately weren't subscribing when we first started, tell them briefly who you are again.
Yeah, my name is Jason Rivera. I'm chairman, CEO, and founder of Rivera Holdings, LLC, an investment holding company. I run the blog valueinvestingjourney.com, and I've written an acclaimed value investing book titled How to Value Invest. Essentially, what I do now is, on top of investing, I teach other people how to invest via courses, one-on-one trainings, stuff like that.
All right, cool. And you're back on the show today to go over an interesting case study with us, huh?
Yes. Yeah. You invited me on. You were looking for potential interesting companies to talk about. Unfortunately, I don't have any recent companies to talk about that I've bought, as I haven't bought a new stock in a business in about 2.5 years now, because I can't find anything of value that fit my specific criteria of value. But I think this case study is very valuable today, because when I found it, it was I believe a $650 million company, and now it is a $2.75 billion company. I called it the next GE in the article, recommendation article I wrote for subscribers to my investment newsletter.
Well, and the reason I wanted to have you on with a case study is I've read your news articles in the past, and I think the way you analyze businesses, it's very simple, but it's also I think you're one of the better writers out there in terms of investment analysis. So I always enjoy reading your work, and that you coming on for an interesting case study would be very valuable.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Luckily, I had the chance to work for an investment newsletter several years ago, which improved my writing immensely, because before that, I don't think I said this last time I was on, but when I was in high school, I wrote a paper and one of my teachers said, "I hope you never want to become a writer because you're terrible at it." And she was right. yeah, she was right. I didn't take it personally. I was friends. We were close family friends, and she told me what I needed to hear, and she was right. But fortunately, I got the chance to work in a prominent investment newsletter several years ago, and they actually taught me how to actually write. So I think that gives me an advantage, at least in terms of style over other value investors. I try to make it a little bit more interesting and simple. Don't use these big words that people can't understand, stuff like that.
All right. Well, not to be verbose by using a plethora of words, why don't we start?
Of course. The company we're going to be talking about today, again, I called it the next GE, in the article, recommendation article I wrote, why did I call it the next GE?
What's the company, first of all?
Oh, yes, probably a good place to start. Don't want to gloss over that. Right? For people who are following along in this entire process, yeah, good catch on the host part there.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
Stock ticker is BESIY. It's an ADR, and the name of the company is BE Semiconductor Industries NV ADR, listed on Morningstar. Again, stock ticker BESIY.
You like the strangest shit. You think I'll ever have you on this show? And you'll talk about like something anyone's ever heard of.
Hopefully not.
Good.
I hope not.
Good. Then I'll keep having you on. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I hope not. These are the kind of companies where I find advantages. This is how I've beat Buffett in the first five years of my career, almost six now. Is looking places people either can't or won't look.
Yeah.
And you, Eric, you know this. I mean,
yes.
Do you know this? The least or the less competition you have, the better when it comes to this kind of stuff. That's why I focus on small caps, nano caps, ADRs, and that's why I'll look anywhere in the world. Most people will not even consider companies on the OTC stock market, which is where this company is listed, for example, because they assume every company on the OTC market is terrible. It's a crap company.
It's a shell company,
or it's incredibly risky.
Yeah.
And I would agree that if you don't know what you're doing in the small cap, nano cap, OTC market area, you don't need to be investing in it because you will get hammered.
Yeah.
Having said that, if you do know what you're doing, you can find value. And most people, I actually was talking with my $10,000 coaching client the other day, and I was telling about the OTC and ADR market, and he didn't even realize some of the stuff that I was telling him. And I went and proved it to him, and you can go look this up. The ticker for Nestle, one of the biggest companies in the entire world, is listed on the OTC market in the United States.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So again, going back to your point, I hope every time I'm on this podcast, I can bring value and bring some kind of knowledge and some weird random companies listed in the Netherlands that do business in Taiwan and all over the world.
Have you ever looked on the Iraqi stock exchange?
No, but scarily enough, I looked at one point. I think it was either during the Iraqi war, the second Iraqi war, or shortly after it ended. And scarily enough, I looked to see if there were any publicly listed companies in Iraq over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll look anywhere in the world. As long as I can trust that the government won't take over the assets of the company. For example, I won't invest in Venezuela or Russia in any circumstance right now.
There's also some stock exchanges where, like, I feel like it's like always weird. It's like a weird process to even get access to it. If for instance, like the country is not a friend to the United States, or there's all these weird things.
Yeah, I mean, China isn't even a good example.
This would be a good topic, like, to go into in a whole other show. Just have this topic.
Yeah, it would. And I'll just finish this point real quick since I brought it up. I believe they're called variable interest rate entities in China. Essentially, what that means is when you buy a Chinese listed company in the United States, you buy a percentage of the VIE is what they're called. You don't actually own in terms of U.S. stock markets and European stock markets and most stock markets around the world. You don't actually technically own a percentage of the company. You own a percentage of the company where the stock is listed. So that's another company you have to be careful. And it's opening up a little bit. But yeah, again, you generally have to be able to trust the government where the country is listed.
Yeah. All right. So tell us more about this company. You told us the ticker. What's it actually called?
BE Semiconductor Industries.
Okay.
It's a Netherlands based company that has their operational headquarters in Taiwan. And they operate in Southeast Asia, China, United States, all over Europe. The reason I called them Next GE, and that's, I mean, GE is one of the biggest, most well-known companies in the world, and I don't use hyperbole when I write, so why would I say something like that? It's not necessarily because I could think that they could become the next GE, which I think they could. I would never project something like that, though. It's because they followed Jack Welch's principles when he was their chairman CEO in the 80s. Jack Welch brought in, or when he was brought in, he had the philosophy of every one of our businesses is going to be number one or number two in their category, or we're going to sell it or close the entire business down. This company follows the same model. They have listed in their financial reports that they are going to be number one or number two in their entire business, in their businesses they operate in, or they're not going to be in those businesses. So that's why I called it the next GE.
Interesting. And then how did you find this company?
Going back to the OTC markets, several years ago, I started a project where I downloaded the entire OTC market database. I think at that time it was somewhere north of 25,000 companies.
And if you want to go do that, how do you go download the database for our listeners?
They changed their site recently, but I'll try to bring it up on my end while we're talking.
Okay. We can put that in the show notes after. That's not a big deal.
Yeah, I'll add that because they changed their website a little bit lately, so I'm not exactly sure where to find it, but I'll look it up and we'll put, like we said, put it in the show notes.
All right. So you found it by manually looking through the OTC, is that correct?
Yeah, one by one, I got rid of all the companies I couldn't understand, things like banks, or that I don't understand banks, natural resource companies, oil and gas.
Yeah. So you found this company, reading through their financials, are you sure they used Jack Welch's principles, or was it just like it seems like it based off, reading their reports or whatever? Did they specifically mention GE?
I don't think they specifically mentioned GE, if I remember correctly. I do remember that they specifically said we're going to be number one or we're number two in our industry, or not, we're not going to be in it.
Did it seem like they were actually delivering on that? I mean, had they been delivering on that? Okay.
Yes, and actually the first thing that caught my eye is I don't actually read financials first. I kind of do things a little bit backwards for most investors. Yeah. Most investors, when they find a company they want to look at, they immediately go to the financials. What I do, because I do a lot of manual searching, I don't use stock screeners at all. So I have to manually search. And what I do is I go to a site like Morningstar, for example, and I look at their financial metrics and their numbers on a preliminary basis, things like operating margin, return on invested capital, free cash flow to sales, those kind of margins to get an idea of – and of course, the strength of the balance sheet, cash levels compared to debt. So I can get an idea of if I want to evaluate this company further.
Yeah.
And what I found, I'm getting to the numbers now, what I found is this company's numbers were spectacular. Again, actually in my notes here, I said it was a $650 million company earlier. It was actually a $640 million market cap company when I evaluated them. Mm-hmm. Their earnings yields range from 14% all the way up to 35%, depending on the profitability compared to the TEV of the company, the total enterprise value of the company. Mm-hmm. Their operating margins were around 20%, and their ROIC, according to Morningstar, was 22.7%. I actually calculated their ROIC to be 29.2%.
Okay, interesting.
And their free cash flow to sales was 21.2%. For free cash flow to sales, I look for anything above 5% on a consistent basis. This was four times that. So essentially what that meant to me is that for every dollar this company spent got in sales, after all expenses were paid, after all capital expenditures were paid, after all salaries, everything like that were paid, they made 21.2 cents for every dollar they got in sales, which is insane. That's an insane number.
Yeah.
So that is one of the things, that and the ROIC, 29.2%. I don't know what you look for, Eric, when it comes to ROIC, but anything over 10% on a consistent basis I consider to be great. So 29.2%, again, for a small cap, nano cap company, that's insane.
Yeah. Interesting. So what did you think it was worth at the time?
At the time, I thought it was worth, let's see. While I'm looking for that, I'm actually going through my notes right now. I noticed it was buying back, it could back buy back 10% of its shares, and it was undervalued by about 40% is what I estimated. So I estimated just roughly off the top of my head about $1.1 billion market cap when it was selling for $640 billion.
And you were valuing it at 1.1 based off what?
Their operations and how well their operations were valued and their assets, if I remember correctly. Let's see here. Sorry, this was a long issue. It was a 39 pager.
Wow.
Valuation. Okay, so $20 a share at that point it was. And I actually had a price target of $27.99 per share, which was a good valuation, in my opinion. But as of today, right now, as we're talking, it is up to $79 a share. So even on my high-end estimate, it's blown my high-end estimate out of the water.
And then what's the valuation like today?
Valuation today is, to be honest with you, I only evaluate companies that I own on a yearly basis unless some kind of major news comes up. So I don't have an accurate valuation today. Based on their current numbers, though, because valuation, as we know, fluctuates over time as the company improves its operations based off its based off its numbers, its operating margin has dropped slightly to 16% from 20%. It doesn't look like it's producing quite as much free cash flow, although still fantastic. So it's probably more fairly to overvalue today, but I'm going to hold it. And this is something, and Eric and I were talking about this before we came on air. He recently bought into a stock that I sold after it went up in value a couple years ago, and I'm now regretting that.
No names, please.
Yeah, no. I know the size of that company. I will not name that company.
Yeah, so. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I would not do that. But yeah, I mean, it's probably fairly valued to, I would say it's probably overvalued at this point. Just by looking at the basic numbers that I always look at.
The semiconductor company we're talking about.
Yes, semiconductor company. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Kind of going off a tangent there. Actually, the margins by one. This is where I hate the new Morningstar website. This is a side tangent. Do you have access to the beta website?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
It drives me insane. It takes forever to load, and the numbers are all messed up. On one page, it said it had a 16% operating margin in the trailing 12-month. On this one, it has a 33%. So if they have a 33% operating margin, that's actually improved, and they're probably fairly undervalued to slightly undervalued.
Interesting.
Again, this, I don't know what to trust on Morningstar right now. This new beta site drives me insane, and I can't get rid of it.
So any other things about this company?
Yeah. Not only were they massively undervalued, they were massive on an intrinsic total basis. They were massively undervalued compared to their peers. I actually own two companies in this industry. And most people, when they think of value investors, and if you are following along in this, you'll see that they are considered in the tech industry. As value investors, we generally stay away from tech because things change at a rapid pace and there's so much uncertainty in this area. This is what I like to call, they're in the picks and shovels industry of tech. They essentially, their process, I don't know how much you or your listeners or the listeners know about the semiconductor industry, but typically the process goes, the big companies like Micron and Intel make the parts, make the microprocessors, And then what BES IY does is they are essentially a third-party testing and packaging company. Tech companies outsource that process because it takes a lot of knowledge. It takes a lot of capital expenditures for the machines. So they outsource it to third-party companies. So this company and the other one like it in its industry that I own, they are in what is the picks and shovels part of the business, which means they are a necessary part of the tech arena, which makes them pretty much indispensable to these bigger companies because they'd have to spend billions of dollars. Intel and Micron would have to spend billions of dollars to replace these companies. Again, that is something we like as generally like as value investors, indispensable companies, companies with huge competitive advantages, stuff like that. So if anybody's following along and they see that this is in the tank industry, look a little bit further and I bet you will find this company interesting, at least from how they operate.
Yeah. Interesting.
So getting back to your original question or getting right back to my original point is this company, there's obviously at $640 million, even though that's a huge number to most people, that's a small company when it comes to public companies, especially with Intel. I don't know, they're 50 plus to 100 plus billion dollar company, whatever they are. And just like this company, they have competitors in their industry that are bigger and have more clout. Normally, that's a bad thing. Why? Because they can spend more, they have greater customer bases, greater distribution, whatever the case may be. There's lots of different cases here why that could be an advantage in this case, but it's not in this case. This company, not only was it massively undervalued on an intrinsic basis, but when I compared it to its competitors, it was not only outperforming its competitors, its bigger competitors, it's the biggest one at this case was $7.9 billion. Its margins were, let's see, in some cases, 3 to 4 times higher than their biggest competitors' margins.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And this, again, going back to kind of what we talked about earlier, this is why I love looking at obscure companies no one else will look at because – and this is everybody who does this, especially when they first start. You imagine the bigger companies are generally have the better margins. They're more well-known. They have more connections. They have competitive advantage, stuff like that. But when you're dealing
– generally, that's true.
Yeah, and generally that's true. But – and that's why I love looking at these kind of small, obscure companies because occasionally, and I'm not going to say this is even a common occurrence, it's very rare to find something like this. But when you do find it, it's amazing because not only was this company's margins, again, 3 or 4 times higher than its bigger competitors' margins, but they were fantastic. I mean, 29.2% was my ROIC estimate. 21.2%, again, was the free cash flow to sales. And their operating margin was almost 19.7%. That's insane. that's an insane amount. So not only was their margins higher by quite a bit, they were also, at least on a relative basis compared to how much profitability they produced and the size of the company, let's see, about 5 times in the biggest company case, 5 times cheaper on a relative basis when it comes to a metric like TEV to owner's earnings. When you're comparing total enterprise value to owner earnings, they're almost 5 times cheaper on that relative valuation basis.
Very interesting.
Yeah, no, and like I said at the beginning, I love these kind of companies, but I have to say it because I say it every time to everybody I talk to about this kind of stuff. If you don't know what you're doing, because if I would have heard something like this when I first started, I would have been like, oh man, I'm going to go research the OTC and ADR markets right away and go into microcaps and nanocaps right away. I have to advise highly against that.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, if you do not know what you're doing in this area, you will get hammered. because they're, I would say, I don't know how much you look at this market, Eric. I know you look at it more than a lot of other investors do. But I would say, by my estimates, 90 to 95% of the companies in this arena are terrible. They're just completely either frauds. They don't have any, they don't report their financials. They don't have any numbers. They're shell companies, stuff like that. I mean, or they're just unprofitable, terrible companies. I would say probably 90 to 95% of companies in this arena are terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anything else to add, or want to call it there?
Yeah, I mean, the last thing, my last point here was, my last major point is they, on top of the them being a, kind of a necessary part, normally I wouldn't look at something that qualitative in itself and say that's a huge deal, because anybody can kind of do that in time. But this company works with some of the biggest companies in the world: Samsung, Micron, Toshiba, Bosch, Qualcomm, Delphi. So not only they're a third party vendor for all these companies, and again, it would take billions of dollars to replace this company, which by itself, again, isn't a big deal. But this, to me, led to a huge competitive advantage. And again, it's one of the reasons I bought them, and it's one of the reasons they've performed so well over time. Because, I mean, we all know, if you think logically about the microprocessor space, microprocessors are getting smaller. They're going in everything. And here, pretty soon, with the Internet of Things, they're going to be going in everything else. From dishwashers to fridges to pretty much everything in your entire house. So this is going to be a necessary industry over a long period of time. There's estimates it's going to be over a $1 trillion industry. So this company could keep growing. And yeah, I mean, this was one of the best companies I've ever seen on the kind of stuff we've been talking about: the competitive landscape, the margin level, their free cash flow production. It's one of the best companies I've ever seen, and it was a tiny company listed on a exchange most people will not even consider looking at.
Yeah. Now, you said you had this in a write-up, right?
Yes.
Is that public, or was that just for your subscribers?
It's just for my subscribers, but I can make it public for your listeners here.
All right, yeah, if I could put that in the show notes, would that work?
Yeah, that'll work. I can get the PDF link to you, and they can download it exclusively for listening to this, because like you kind of alluded to, other than people who subscribe to this newsletter, nobody else has ever seen it before. But I'm going to let let the listeners listen to it so they can go along and follow along themselves. So
cool. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and if people want to follow your work, what's the best place to, you know, read your writings?
Valueinvestingjourney.com, spelled just how it sounds, is probably the best place. My central hub where I'm building a little bit of everything. Of course, I've got social media and Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and all that. But the main place is valueinvestingjourney.com. That's where I release pretty much all of my information, case studies, videos, all that kind of stuff. So.
Okay. Well, thanks again. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.